neutral athletes. And a lot of people have been raising the question, why is Israel not also being asked to participate as individual neutral athletes? The International Olympic Committee has shown zero interest whatsoever in entertaining this totally reasonable question. And that's why you're seeing Israeli athletes participating under their flag and with their national anthem here in Paris.
Finally, Jules, you have been writing about AI and the use of it at the Olympics. We just have 30 seconds, but if you can explain.
Sure. So in March 2023, the French National Assembly passed a law legalizing AI-powered video surveillance to police the Olympic Games. The law is supposed to sunset in March 2025 after the Olympics. But hey, it doesn't take the imagination of an avant-garde poet to come up with scenarios by which the French government insists upon keeping that law in place. And this is in keeping with what we've seen with previous Olympics, where they use the Olympics as a pretext to get all the special weapons and laws that they'd never be able to get during normal political times. And all too often, those special weapons and laws stay on the book and become part of normalized policing in the wake of the games. And I must say, Amy, normalized policing in too many places is also racialized policing. So you could argue that AI is actually increasing the racialized policing in a society.
We want to thank you both so much for being with us. Jules Boykoff, 5 books on the Olympics, a former Olympic soccer player. We'll link to your pieces in The Nation. Paul Alozzi, a Paris-based activist with Doctors of the World and Other Side of the Medal. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for
you
joining.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, July 29th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. That's Drinking from Puddles, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yeah.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon wildfires have now grown larger than the state of Rhode Island as firefighters continue to battle blazes.
The Oregon Health Authority has new plans to eliminate hepatitis in the state.
And in international news, the Mars rover Perseverance finds a rock that may show there were ancient microbes on Mars.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 26, 2024. I'm Sabine Mercer.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. The total size of the wildfires burning in Oregon is now bigger than the state of Rhode Island. The Durkee Fire in eastern Oregon is the largest fire currently burning in the United States. It's 20% contained, with 268,000 acres burned so far. The Durkee Fire was started by a lightning strike, as were a lot of the fires in Oregon during a lightning storm last week. Folks headed out on the road, especially on Interstate 84, are advised to check out conditions before they go using the Oregon State website tripcheck.com. Weather around the state is a bit better today, but firefighters say there's still a possibility of more growth. An air tanker plane crashed late Thursday, killing the pilot in eastern Oregon today. The plane was fighting the Falls Fire near Seneca. The Falls Fire is in Malheur National Forest, and it's grown to 219 square miles.
4,000 gallons of sewage flooded an elementary school playground in South Portland on Thursday. The direct cause is still unknown, but the sewage came up from a maintenance hole on the Riverdale Grade School playground. It may have been caused by a clogged sewer line. Officials say they stopped the sewage flow within the hour. The playground is closed to allow the school to clean the site, and advisory signs have been placed around the area. The Portland Bureau of Environmental Services says the public should be mindful of what they flush and put down the sink, because things like wet wipes and grease can cause clogs.
World Hepatitis Day is this Sunday, the 28th, and for the Oregon Health Authority, it's an opportunity to promote its plan to eliminate hepatitis across the state. Released in March, the plan includes major goals and strategies to limit the spread of hepatitis A, B, and C over the next 6 years. It's gotten new attention after 2,400 patients in Oregon hospitals were potentially exposed to hepatitis and HIV earlier this month. Concerns are high, but Dr. Dean Seidlinger, Oregon's state health officer, says people should be aware of the threats of hepatitis, but not anxious.
In day-to-day times, people should feel safe and confident in going to the doctor. The risk of exposure to these viruses is extremely low in most cases.
Hepatitis is inflammation of the liver, and contagious viruses are among the causes. Dr. Seidlinger says he's confident Oregon has the technology and resources to fully eliminate the threat. While many people have heard of hepatitis, they may not fully understand how prevalent it is in their communities. According to OHA data, the proportion of chronic hepatitis C cases among people in their 20s tripled between 2010 and 2019. Dr. Seidlinger says there's a good chance most Oregonians know someone who is affected by chronic hepatitis.
It can seem out of the blue to be talking about hepatitis and Hepatitis Awareness Day, but this is a disease that affects many individuals. But the good news is everyone can take steps to protect themselves.
The OHA says you can help prevent the spread of hepatitis by washing hands in fresh produce, staying current on vaccinations, avoiding sharing needles, and getting tested regularly. These tips and more are part of the state's plan to eliminate hepatitis by 2030.
The Washington State Health Department has launched a new system for detecting cases of food poisoning. The agency hopes the online reporting tool can detect diseases early. Eric Tagetoff reports.
Washington State has launched an online system for tracking food poisoning cases. The Washington State Health Department has opened its foodborne illness notification system for filing complaints about food safety. Bill Marler is a food safety lawyer in Washington State and says the system will rely on data to pinpoint potential food safety hazards.
See it more and more people utilizing these services, just the sheer volume of the data will make it more useful because you get more angles to look at.
The health department says the system is anticipated to help with early detection of diseases, illness prevention, proactive safety measures, and educational opportunities. The state notes that 1 in 6 Americans suffers from food poisoning each year. Marler believes the data collection will be helpful, but also notes that it isn't a panacea for stopping outbreaks. He says listeria is a good example. The period between consumption and onset of illness is between 3 and 70 days.
I'm not sure I can remember what I ate 3 days ago, let alone what I ate 70 days ago. So a lot of this analysis is sometimes flawed by people's memories and the incubation periods.
Marler adds that listeria is also a pressing example because of the outbreak of it in deli meat. According to the CDC, 2 people have died and 28 have been hospitalized from the current outbreak across the country, although no cases have been reported in Washington State. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Multnomah County District Attorney's Office will no longer dismiss jurors without reason during jury selection for misdemeanor trials. That change was announced on Monday by outgoing DA Mike Schmidt. This type of juror dismissal is called a peremptory challenge and is used by lawyers on both sides of a case to shape up who ends up on the jury and who ends up deciding the case. They come after other jury dismissal reasons that lawyers might have, like a conflict of interest or bias. Many states and courts have come to see these peremptory challenges as discriminatory. They have a legacy of blocking people of color from serving on juries. The new policy reads, quote, "This office recognizes that the use of peremptory strikes to exclude prospective jurors has long created credible evidence of racial and ethnic exclusion of jurors and is deeply disfavored by our office except in cases of manifest need," end quote. D.A. Schmidt lost re-election to the office in May, and D.A.-elect Nathan Vasquez voiced his disapproval for the policy change. He says he will reconsider the policy when he takes office in January.
The Mars rover Perseverance finds evidence to suggest there may have been ancient microbes on Mars. The robot found a vein-filled red rock last week with what looked like scattered leopard spots. Scientists think the spots could show there were ancient chemical reactions happening in the rock that once supported microbial organisms. David Flannery is a member of the NASA Perseverance science team. He said, "These spots are a big surprise. On Earth, these types of features in rocks are often associated with the fossilized record of microbes living in the subsurface." Scientists have nicknamed the rock Shave of Falls after one of the Grand Canyon's waterfalls. It's still early in the research process, and scientists would need to look at the rock back on Earth to be sure about how it was created. But the rock specimen could help unlock whether Mars was once a planet that was hospitable to life.
Some 34 years after the Americans with Disabilities Act, advocates feel more must be done to create universal accessibility, from making physical spaces like mass transit more accessible to removing employment barriers for people with disabilities. Edwin J. Vieira has more on the story.
New York disability rights advocates are celebrating the 34th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act passage. The 1990 legislation prohibits discrimination against people with physical or mental disabilities. Along with becoming a standard part of employment law, it bolsters accessibility in the public environment. Dr. Sharon McLennan Weir with the Center for Independence of the Disabled New York says, as seminal as the ADA is, more work must be done to achieve true accessibility.
Even though ADA has been around for many, many years, there is still ignorance regarding what is true accessibility and how new construction at times can still be put up without following the principles of ADA universal access.
Downstate New York's transportation systems lack ADA compliance. Only 31% of New York City's subway system is accessible to people with disabilities. Funding has been allocated to make the system 95% compliant. The work would have been done by 2055, but since Governor Kathy Hochul paused congestion pricing, these plans have been put on hold indefinitely. A New York City comptroller report finds only 40% of the city's disabled population is employed. Statewide reports show post-pandemic employment for people with disabilities is recovering much slower than the nation. McLennan Weir says to change this, classroom instructional materials need to be more accessible.
Having more raised line drawings, having more Braille available, having more assistive technology that can read various types of charts and diagrams.
She thinks certain industries are siloed, but once they open up to better comprehend universal accessibility, more people with disabilities will be able to join them. One place this can work is in STEM fields, as only 3% of that workforce includes people with disabilities. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
Vice President Harris meets with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and calls for a ceasefire. Michigan Representative Rashida Tlaib faces backlash for a protest during Netanyahu's speech, and Virginia Senator Mark Warner advocates for student debt relief. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Let us all do what we can to prevent the suffering of innocent civilians, and let us condemn anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and hate of any kind.
Vice President and presidential candidate Kamala Harris pushed a U.S.-backed ceasefire deal and said it's time to end the war in Gaza after a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu took a hard line when addressing Congress to applause from Republicans and pro-Israel Democrats. He'll meet with former President Donald Trump today at Mar-a-Lago. But critics charge he's extending the Gaza war as a way to cling to power. Jonathan Deccan Chen, the father of a hostage held by Hamas, says he favors the three-phase deal because it could bring his son home.
There is more reason today than in any time since the last round of hostage releases that something can happen.
More than 40 lawmakers boycotted Netanyahu's address. Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian American in Congress, has been facing criticism for a silent protest during the speech. One Republican said the sign referred to herself, and another called her an absolute disgrace on social media. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries defended Tlaib.
Rashida Tlaib is an elected member of Congress. Okay, she has a responsibility to her district in the same way that I have a responsibility to my district.
Vermont Republican Senate hopeful Gerald Malloy is contrasting himself from his opponent, progressive and Netanyahu critic Bernie Sanders. Malloy affirmed Israel's right to self-defense while also expressing regret over the deaths of Palestinian civilians.
I support Israel. I am not in favor of lobbying, as I mentioned, billions of dollars over the fence. I pray for peace every day. I want peace, and it pains me to see any people being killed.
Virginia Senator Mark Warner says he wants Congress to focus on issues besides the war in Gaza, like a bipartisan plan to help with student debt. He says the bill could bring more than $1.5 billion in debt relief through a tax cut for employers who aid their workers.
It's a great retention tool, and it's also one more tool to be used in freeing up some of the burdens from student debt.
Vice President Kamala Harris hopes to build on her momentum with an appearance on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars, encouraging voter registration and emphasizing LGBTQ issues.
Each day, we are seeing our rights and freedoms under attack, including the rights of everyone to be who they are, love who they love, openly and with pride. No one is alone. We are all in this together. And your vote is your power.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 54 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 82. Today in history, in 1989, a federal grand jury indicts Cornell University student Robert T. Morris Jr. for releasing the Morris Worm, one of the first computer worms. Morris was the first person to be prosecuted under the 1986 Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. The quote of the day is from American filmmaker Stanley Kubrick, born this day in 1928. He said, quote, "The most terrifying fact about the universe is not that it is hostile, but that it is indifferent. But if we can come to terms with this indifference and accept the challenges of life within the boundaries of death, however mutable man may be able to make them, our existence as a species can have genuine meaning and fulfillment. However vast the darkness, we must supply our own light."
The Cherokee Nation Juvenile Healing to Wellness Court in Oklahoma helps to keep young people out of the justice system. With more on how they approach the work, it's Aunt Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Oklahoma, the Cherokee Nation Juvenile Healing to Wellness Court is designed to help keep young people out of the justice system. In part one of the series, we took a look at how the program focuses on Cherokee culture and community. In part two, members of the court team share how the program is a hands-on, more personal approach, which includes working with the Cherokee Nation Marshal Service. Shannon Buell is Cherokee Nation Marshal.
Tribal issues and tribal governments, tribal communities has historically been more holistic than our non-tribal counterparts. You know, it is one of my goals that I gave the Justice Services Department that do whatever you need to do to make sure me and my marshals don't have to deal with them as an adult. That means give good, positive training, support, whatever we need early on and hopefully we can change their trajectory and where they might be.
The Healing to Wellness Court team has the support of the Cherokee Nation's top leader, Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr.
Rather than put them through the often heartless criminal justice system that we see in a lot of parts of this country, do something that lifts them up, makes them feel like they're the center of something that isn't a condemnation. Certainly, they need to be responsible, and there's an element of being responsible, but there's, I think, more importantly, a path that's diverted out of the traditional law and punishment.
As a sovereign tribal nation, having jurisdiction over Cherokee people within the Cherokee Nation is of great significance to the tribe, and with the 2020 U.S. Supreme Court McGirt ruling that its reservation had never been disestablished, the Cherokee Nation has had an opportunity to reimagine its justice system. Cherokee Nation District Judge Nathan Bernard.
The nation has control over our programs, hence the Healing to Wellness. That's something that may not have been possible if they were prosecuted in the state court. You know, we have the ability to govern. Whenever our young person has a situation where they break the law, that it's the nation that has the opportunity to decide what's going to happen to that young person.
Additional team members helping guide young people are from the tribe's Attorney General's Office and Behavioral Health Care. Nikki Baker-Lymore is Senior Assistant Attorney General.
If a juvenile is just getting into experimenting with drugs and having some minor crimes that aren't violent, it's the perfect type of kiddo that we want to work with and try to influence so that they can lead a successful life, clean of drugs and crime-free.
John Robinson, a behavioral health services supervisor, says they want the young people to live their lives fully and be productive members of society.
Some days these kiddos will hopefully be adults. They don't need to be incarcerated. They don't need to be still involved with the system. They may be the guy that's driving my Uber, my cab. They may be my nurse. They may be the guy waiting my table or serving my food. So I definitely want them at their best.
The voluntary phase program lasts a minimum of 8 months. This story is a collaboration with First Nations Experience Television with support from the Public Welfare Foundation. The Federal Communications Commission has announced the commission will vote during its August open meeting whether to adopt a new event code that would deliver messages to the public over television and radio about missing and endangered persons. According to the FCC, adding the event code to the nation's emergency alert system would help law enforcement agencies get public attention to missing and endangered people of all ages who do not qualify for Amber Alerts for children. It's also intended to help tribal communities. The commission's open meeting is scheduled for August 7th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Biden administration has forgiven over $62 billion in student debt for more than 871,000 public service workers nationwide. Vice President Kamala Harris gave a keynote address on Thursday to the American Federation of Teachers Convention in Houston, Texas. Harris talked about the importance of fighting for the future and touted the administration's student loan forgiveness plans. Danielle Smith has more.
Student loan forgiveness took center stage on Thursday at the American Federation of Teachers Conference. The Biden administration has canceled over $62 billion in federal student debt for more than 871,000 public service workers nationwide, including teachers. Presidential candidate Kamala Harris spoke at the conference, thanking educators for their work for children's well-being. She told them the administration sees a future with affordable health care, affordable child care, and paid leave, not for some, but for all.
We see a future where every student has the support and the resources they need to thrive, and a future where no teacher has to struggle with the burden of student loan debt. So as an example, our administration has forgiven student loan debt for nearly 5 million Americans.
She pointed out that the federal student debt relief plans, including the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, face potential threats due to legal challenges and some resistance from Republicans in Congress. A Pennsylvania recipient of student loan forgiveness introduced Vice President Harris. Brittany Schaup is a special education teacher in the Pittsburgh Public Schools. Schaup said she heard about the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, or PSLF, but most people who applied for it didn't receive it during the last administration.
The Biden-Harris administration fixed PSLF.
and made the process easy. So I applied and later had my student loans forgiven. This is a huge weight off my shoulders. And now I help my fellow teachers get the debt forgiveness they deserve.
The AFT conference wrapped up Thursday in Houston with more than 3,500 educators in attendance. I'm Danielle Smith, Keystone State News Connection.
It's important that pet owners know how to protect their animals during a heat wave. On hot days, dogs and cats should be kept in cooler areas with air conditioning and shade, and they should be watched for signs of distress. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Extreme heat is not just a threat to people. It can also be dangerous for pets. And to stay safe during a heat wave, animals need many of the same protections humans do. On a hot day, keep your dogs and cats out of the sun and provide them with plenty of water. If you go for a walk, try to do it in the morning or evening when temperatures are cooler. And never leave your pet in a parked car on a hot day. Temperatures in a vehicle can quickly reach more than 100 degrees, even with the windows cracked, putting the animal in serious danger. And even when you take precautions, keep an eye on your pets for signs of distress. Dogs, for example, might have trouble breathing and seem weak, with glazed eyes and a rapid heartbeat. Some breeds, like boxers and pugs, as well as Persian cats, have short muzzles that make it harder to cool down by panting, so they can be even more vulnerable to the heat. If you suspect that your pet may be overheating, immediately seek emergency veterinary care. As the climate continues to warm, extreme heat will become much more common worldwide. But by taking a few precautions, pet owners can help keep their furry friends safe and happy all summer. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now we go to Pearl Stark from KPOV Bend with The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio feature focused on word and logic puzzles. This week, I is one, but what other words are numbers too?
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you for a common proverb. There's a four-letter sequence that appears twice consecutively in the proverb. And as a bonus, if you remove all the instances of each of those four letters and rearrange what's left, you get mold. Well, the answer is no man is an island, which contains A-N-I-S twice in a row. Our winner this week is Sam Bowman, who listens to KBOO in Portland, Oregon. Hey, you Rastaman, hey, European, Indian man, we gotta come. The English word I is a valid Roman numeral. What other common English word is also a valid Roman numeral? So again, like the word I, what is another common English word that is a valid Roman numeral? When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. What I clung to, this has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of July 22nd. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 26th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Eric Tagadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Farah Siddiqui, Edwin G. Vieira, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Pearl Stark. And the director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sabine Mercer.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our wonderful members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Canciones exuberantes y paisajes sonores llenos de vida en el jardín del corazón. Cada episodio explora las formas en que la música lleva nuestras emociones. Explorar el jardín cada segundo viernes de la mes, desde 8 a 10 de la noche. En el jardín del corazón. Es un programa bilingual en español y inglés que ofrece una mezcla de música que la abarca géneros, lenguas